Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 188. And last time we finished chapter 34. And at that point, Jacob bought that piece of land, so his family, the whole great party that he had with him, would be able to settle in that land. And so he bought that piece of land from the natives. And it's interesting that his descendants, when they came back in this last century, actually 2 centuries ago, in the 1800s, toward the end, as they came back to the land that was called at the time Palestine, they were basically doing the same. Even though the land belonged to them by divine decree, just like their fathers, they paid money for many, many parcels of land. You know, the Arabs can claim that, you know, the Jews came and stole it from them, but they came, they've got the deeds for it. They bought an awful lot of land from the Arabs. And in those days, you know, they lived in peace with them, just like here. Abraham lived in peace with the natives, more or less, and Isaac did likewise, and so is Jacob here. And so he comes to a certain area, it's empty, he goes, you know, to the inhabitants of the city, they're not using it, and he's buying it from them. And that's exactly what the children of Israel, when they came back, when God brought them back, in recent history, they've done the same. They also paid with good money, and they bought a lot of land, and much of the land has been bought by the Jews that were returning for, the last couple of centuries. And it's only during the war in 48 that whatever was taken at that time was by war. And obviously, that's exactly was even the history of Israel in the old days. We don't read about it. You know, as you read the story of Jacob here, you don't hear anything about war. You hear it about Abraham when he went to war against the people, but not in his own land. With Isaac, you don't hear of any war there either. You hear about water war, but not land war. And then with Jacob, we don't hear about any conflict whatsoever that he has with the people, in essence of going to war against them, with the exception of what we're going to read here. And yet later on, when he speaks to his son Joseph, he tells him basically about this very particular piece of land here that he's going to give to him, because it was nearby where his mother died. But he said that land, he said, he conquered by his sword from the Amorite, which means that he too went to war, even though it's not recorded. And so this is where he finds himself now. And now we read a story of what happened at that time. Now this is sort of a soap opera story here with his daughter Dinah. And so we read in chapter 34 in verse 1, and Dinah, or Dinah. Dinah, that's the feminine form of Din, or Dan, which means Dan is judge, and Dinah was the feminine form of it. And Dinah, or Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Well, obviously, you know, she's, imagine that, 12 brothers, that is 11 brothers. Benjamin was not born yet, but 11 brothers and one daughter, and, you know, she's not feeling too comfortable, not having her own company, you know, the same sex. And so obviously it's natural for her, once to settle over there, you know, you go to the market, you meet people and all that, so she'd like to play with other girls, so to speak. Only, this time she's already a mature woman, and somebody takes advantage of her. How old she was, we don't know. She might have been 15, 16, 17, whatever it may be, 18. And she's not married yet. And so she goes to see the daughters of the land. It doesn't say she was going around, you know, looking for a guy or a boy, you see. She went to see the daughters of the land. That was her intent. And Shechem, the son of Hamor, so Hamor, who was a patriarch, the patriarch was a donkey, that is his name, was a donkey, and his son was Shechem, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her. I don't know, there's nothing wrong with seeing her, but he took her. And that was wrong. You see, but he was a Canaanite, you know, he was a pagan, you know, he was not a member of the family of Israel, and he did not go by the rule. And even among the Canaanites, he still had rules, you know, you want somebody, you go to his father, to her father, that is, and then you strike a match, you know, your parents deal with the other parents. But here he is a prince, you know, obviously haughty and arrogant, or else he would not have done that. And, you know, cocky type of a guy, and he just takes her. She wasn't lying, was not looking for him. She was looking for the daughters of the land. And so he sees her, he takes her, and he lies with her, and he humbles her. In other words, that's a biblical terminology for having sex with a person against their will. And verse 3, and his soul did cleave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. Just like a lot of people today, you know, they have sex and then they talk about marriage and they fall in love and, you know, so forth. And so his soul did cleave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. Well, love did not justify his actions before that. He already committed a big, big, big no-no, you know, in the sight of Israel, in the sight of God, and for which cause he was going to pay very dearly for it, he and all of his city. And so his soul did cleave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel and spoke comfortably unto the damsel. You know, after he had done already what he had done, you know, contrary to the law. And now she's stuck, you know, what else is she, you know, she's going to do? In essence, he's kidnapping her. And now he speaks swiftly, you know, sweetly to her. And Shem spoke unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. That's something he should have done before, not after. You know, to this very day, unfortunately, that's what a lot of people are doing. And now Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, you see. Jacob doesn't look on it, well, you know, they fell in love and that's what happened. No, he defiled her. You see, now you don't defile your own wife that you marry, but you defile some, you know, a virgin that you've taken contrary to law and custom. And though, so, this is what he, that's what he regarded it, because from the point of view of God's law, that's the way it is. People don't see it that way. And so, and his sons were not with he, you know, in other words, his sons were with his cattle in the field. And Jacob held his peace until they came. In other words, there's nothing he could do about it. And all the men were out, not only his sons, but all the servants were with them in the field. And so, verse 6, we read, and Hamor, the father of Shem, went out unto Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. In other words, you can imagine, you know, that he comes to Jacob, tells him about those things. Jacob sends a servant, you know, to call the rest of the sons and, you know, to find out what can they do about it. And so they hear about it and they come, you know, rush back. And you can see the morality of all of them. You know, they're very, very incensed that such a thing has happened. You know, they couldn't care less about the fact. And they're justified by that, you know, this young man, you know, is a prince and he falls in love with their daughter. And that is with his sister. Well, the thing about it is, he raped her. And that's exactly what he did. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and were very wroth, because he had wrought a vile deed in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter. Now you can see, they're reacting from the point of view of God, from the point of view of the law, from the point of view of the custom, of the civility of the life, you see, and righteousness that comes from the law of God, which they are fully aware of. Some people think the law was given in Sinai. Until this time, everybody was ignorant and nobody knew anything. That was not true. The laws of God were always there. Not the totality of the, you know, the laws that were given later on in Sinai, but, you know, the basics were all there. And so that was their reaction, in contrast to the reaction of this man. You know, he takes her, he sees her, he takes her, he violates her, and then he says to his father, you go get her for me. So he doesn't see anything wrong with what he had done, you see. And that's basically an aspect that has been repeated many times. When people depart from morality, that's the way they view it, yet the people on the other side who serve God, they view it totally differently. And so obviously, a penalty needed to be executed here, and God is not a respecter of persons. And so they reacted in a righteous indignation, and they were about to do something with this situation. And so from their point of view, he had wrote, he had done a vile deed in Israel. So this is the first terminology you'll ever hear about doing something evil in Israel, that is, in the family of Israel. Not just a family, let alone a nation or many nations. And lying with Jacob's daughter. Which thing ought not to be done? And even the society, you know, as long as they were decent, they themselves didn't do things like that. But here it is, an abuse by a prince who thinks that he can get away with anything. And not so. They were going to let him know what they thought about it. And Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. I pray you give her unto him to wife." Now the father at least is civil about it, but he himself should have realized the wickedness of what his son had done. And these people came, and you know, they bought the land from him, and they were living in peace with him, and he knew that they were different people, and they had their own religion and customs and all that, and he should not have abused it, and he should have dealt with his son. Well, instead of doing it, well, we don't know what kind of emotional and a syndrome he was going through at the time because of what his son had done. All we know is what he does here. You know, he tries to make the best of it, keep the peace there. After all, they still were the many. He could have wiped out, you know, Jacob and his family and do whatever they wanted to them. But, you know, they were not of that state of mind. And so that's what he's saying here. "I pray you give her unto him to wife." Well, he already married her in the sense of, you know, the biblical, when a man goes to a woman, she becomes his wife through a sexual intercourse. He already went through that phase, but he's going about it the wrong way, backward. As a lot of people are doing it, you know, they put the horse before the cart. And this is what makes it evil. And so he said, "Well, you do that and make marriages with us and give your daughters unto us and take our daughters unto you." Well, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, if we are all the same people, you know, that sounds good. He didn't see anything wrong with that. But the exception is that God, from the beginning, when he called Abraham out of Babylon, he called him to be an exception, you see. A people that is separate from the land and their customs and their religion and their habits and their laws and their ways of life. And so then things like that become a great offense, not a decent proposal. And just like one movie called it, it is an indecent proposal. Verse 10, "And he said, you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you." So he's, from his point of view, he's a peacemaker, not knowing anything by the law of God, you know, as he should, and the severity of what his son had done, you know, he's thinking in this manner. And that's exactly what a lot of nations were always doing to Israel, you know. So you're around here, you know, we're around here, you know, we go to the market. Now let's have peace and let's intermarry and things like that. And Israel fell for it again and again and again. And God warned them against it, because he called them for a specific commission to be a light to the nations and to proclaim his law to all nations and not the law of the land. And so he says, "You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade you therein, and get you possessions therein." And I know all that sounds good from his point of view, and from the worldly point of view sounds good. But you see, when God enters into the picture in his law, then everything is totally different. After all, this is in essence what Satan the devil was telling Jesus Christ, you know. "All you have to do is bow down before me, and I'll give you the whole, you know, the whole earth, you know, all the glory and the honor, you know, the honor and all that. You know, you're going to have it right now. You know, what's wrong with that?" You see? And that's how the world always comes. The people of Israel, you know, what's wrong with that? You know, we're all one people, you know. Well, let's all be together. This is what they call unity. Let's all be united. Well, this is not God's unity. That's men's concept of unity and harmony. And men of God need to know the difference between the holy and the profane. When unity is a profane thing, when unity is a righteous thing. If it is with God, it is holy and right. But if it is with man and it's contrary to God, this is not unity. You see, this profanity from God's point of view. And so, verse 11, we read, "And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren," that is now the boys speaking, the young, haughty, and arrogant prince, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and what you shall say unto me, I will give." You see, because he's the heir of his father, so obviously he can give whatever they want. He said, "Ask me never so much dowry and gift." You know, whatever you ask, I'll give you. and I will give according as you shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife. So, in essence, you might say, you know, apart from the evil things that he had done, you know, seems to be like a decent boy, just got carried away with it. The problem is, God does not compromise with sin, and he doesn't regard it in this manner, as men does. And that's what the problem is, you know. Oftentimes people say, well, you know, it's just a little sin, you know, it's no big deal. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, the Savior of mankind, the Creator, had to give his life even for the littlest, you know, sin that we have committed. So God doesn't hold, you know, regard it as a very light thing. And so we read the reaction of the sons of Jacob, verse 13, and the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor and his father with guile. You know, the common quality in the, that was in Jacob, deceitfulness, and their father-in-law. I mean, they've learned a lot. They had a good grandfather teach them all these things. And also, in essence, they were using the, you know, the tactic of, you know, be shrewd as a serpent and harmless as a dove, although they were not harmless as a dove, finally. And so they spoke with guile and spoke to them, you know, because he had defiled Dinah. In other words, they spoke with guile because they had defiled Dinah, and actually they had something else in mind. You know, that's the way they regarded it. In other words, they were not about to fall for that, you know, sweet song and serenade that he was singing to them, and I'll give you anything you want and all that. All they could think about is the wickedness and the vile thing that was committed in Israel. And they were not about to compromise, you know, with this dishonor of the family. And when you go to the Middle East to this very day, you find the same thing. There are still people today who kill. Literally, they actually go and kill, you know, one of the members of the family. Because when a woman is defiled, when a daughter is defiled, you know, regardless that, you know, supposedly they were in love, you see, when a daughter is defiled, apart from the marriage, the whole family is in shame and dishonor. And everybody would look upon them from that day on, you see. And so the only way to rectify that, and that's what they do to this very day, and I think that it is a great honor from their point of view. As a matter of fact, from the point of view of the law, it still is, and God regards it with favor, even though in our society we think that's evil, horrible, that's criminal, that's evil. You know, we don't understand it. That's how far we departed from the law of God. And so what they do, they literally go and kill the man who defiled their daughter. And that's exactly what they had in mind here. They spoke with guile because he defiled their sister. And so their honor, you see, that the other people couldn't care less about the honor of the family of Israel, but Israel did. His sons did. God does. And so they had to do that to regain their honor, because in their own sight they were defiled now for what was done to them. And because they've defiled Dinah their sister, in verse 14, and they said unto them, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised. And this is where the deceitfulness was. They used that as an excuse, and the law, again, forbade a circumcised Israelite to marry an uncircumcised person. Later on, even in the New Testament, you read about the same law in different words. You know, as Paul would say, that you should not marry anybody who is an unbelieving and do not come under the same yoke, you see, that they are under. You know, the yoke of bondage for them, yoke of sin, but, you know, marry within the faith. So that principle has never ceased, and to this very day it's still the same. Do not marry a person of a different religion or an uncircumcised person, because God made his people holy, you see. And when people are holy and they marry that which is unholy in the sight of God, they too become defiled and unholy. And many of us do not see it that way as we should. And so, especially the young people, you know, they don't understand the religion of their parents, and they don't realize the consequences of that. Because they too, when they were born, they were made holy because of their parents. And so, being holy, they should stick to their own, so to speak. At least people who believe more or less the same way, not that everybody exactly believes the same. But here we're talking about uncircumcised and pagan, you know. And we're not talking about people within the community of Israel. That's a different story. So, they say, we cannot give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that where You know, that would be a reproach unto us. You see? But God made it a reproach for a holy person to mingle with an unholy person. Even within the community of Israel, the priest, you see, the priest was not allowed to marry, let's say, a divorced woman who was an Israelite, because that would make him unholy. And so there are certain limitations that God put on us and certain things that we cannot do even within the community of Israel if we happen to be in a certain office. And generally, they had to marry within their own tribe and not other Israelites, even though they're all Israelites. And so they said, that would be a reproach unto us. We can't do that. Only on this condition will we will be, you know, consent unto you if you will be as we are. And that's the law. Those who are circumcised and become partakers of the commonwealth of Israel and become a part of Israel in doing so, then one law is applicable to all of them. You see, and that's in essence what they are saying here. So you see, many things that you read here are matters of the law that later on were written, you know, as Moses receives that instruction. But this knowledge and information has been around all the time. All the servants of God knew that. They're not to mingle with the others who were considered to be uncircumcised. And verse 16, then he said, when you do that, when you get circumcised, that is, if you will be as we are, that every male of you be circumcised, then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. You see, that's when you have unity. When we are all of the same faith, obeying the same law, that's when we have unity. Unity doesn't happen when a man says, well, you all do, you know, what I say or else. You see, that's not unity. Unity happens in the Spirit, in the law of God. When we all obey the same law of God, we by nature have unity. That's the outcome of it. That's a result and a byproduct of it. It's not an end in itself, unity. You know, let's all do the same thing and speak the same thing. And that's forcing. That's raping, you know, a spirit to be just like you. That's not the unity that is of God, but the unity of men. And that's exactly, you know, what the people of Shem wanted. You know, they wanted that kind of unity where, you know, you know, we defiled your daughter, it's okay, don't, you know, forget about it. And, you know, that's the way we are. Let's have unity anyway. It doesn't work like that with God. And so this is what they say, you know, if you get circumcised, you know, become the people of, in other words, if you become partakers of the commonwealth of Israel, if you're grafted into Israel in essence, you see, then we have unity there. And later on, this very issue came up in different ways in the days of the Apostle Paul, the issue of the circumcision. But I already explained that thoroughly earlier in the series on who and what is Israel, and I think that should be very clear what was the intent there. And so he says, they said to them in verse 17, but if you will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone, you know. We're not going to have any relationship with you. And their words pleased Hamor and Shem, Hamor's son, and the young men deferred not to do the thing because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was honored above all the house of his father. And probably if he had done that earlier, if he went through this legal channel, so to speak, earlier, and laws of decency and righteousness, it's possible that he would have married, you know, if he became a part of the same religion, the same people, and was circumcised, possible that he would have had this peace, you know, with this family and relationship and all that. But because they've done it the wrong way, the only atonement for it was, you know, the retribution that came upon him, and we don't see anything on the part of God who were, you know, being angry with them, even though Jacob was, and obviously they went over and above and beyond. Instead of just taking care of one family, they killed the whole town, that is the males, and this is not God's way. But at least so far, and even then, you know, we don't see God rebuking any one of them. On the contrary, he protected them from the, you know, the people of the land. And so, in verse 19 we read, and the young man deferred not to do the thing because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was honored above all the house of his father, that is, all of his sons, I guess he's the heir apparent. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city and spoke with the men of the city, saying, These men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the man consent unto us to dwell with us. As it is, they were already dwelling there. You see, they bought a piece of land, and they had their own, their own piece of land. But obviously, they're talking about more than that. Just, in other words, we're going to have to merge here, and we want to merge, be one people. That's what he's talking about here, dwelling with them in every way. And he said, if we do that, we can have one big, happy family here. Verse 22, only on this condition will the men consent unto us to dwell with us, to become one people, if every male among us be circumcised. Now, that doesn't sound too good to them, so they're going to give them a carrot here to gain their favor. And so they say, that is the children of Israel, they say, if every male is circumcised among us, with us, every one of you, as they are circumcised, shall not their cattle and their substance and all their beasts be ours? That's covetousness. In other words, arousing their desire there. Because, just to get circumcised because somebody wants to marry somebody else, they don't care much about it. But to get all their substance, that's something else. You see, that was a carrot. The covetousness that was in the matter here. It was not really obedience to the law of God. It was not desiring to follow in his path and obey his commandments. So it was for selfish reasons. And unfortunately, this is the case with many, especially all the false brethren, that enter among the people of God. They may be willing to go through that supposed, circumcision, spiritual circumcision, because of what they can get out of it. And their heart is not there. That's exactly what it was here. And so for covetous sake, we're willing to do that. And so this is what they say, let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and to Shechem, his son, hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city. So everybody went for it. Why? Because they want to obey God? No, because they wanted all the substance. And so, obviously, God is not too pleased with that, because that's deceitfulness on their part. And every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of the city. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were in pain, and apparently the third day, that's the most painful day after the circumcision. Mind you, we're not talking about babies. They can recuperate easily from it. We're talking about adults and no operation, in a hospital. No anesthesia used here. So it's pretty painful. And a lot of people are not willing to do that. And that was, in essence, also part of the problem with the circumcision issue. The Gentiles that were being called by God, whose heart was already being prepared, and in their heart they were willing to obey the law of God, which is different than these people here. These people here are just coming for money's sake, for filthy lucre, so to speak, which is contrary to the law of God. And these people were willing to go for it because of that. And the brethren that God was calling, their heart was already there. But, the physical action of it, being old people, older people, mature people, obviously was very painful. And so, now that all of them had a difficult time with it, some of them had done it without a problem. But obviously, on a wholesale basis, so to speak, many find it very difficult going through this physical operation. And so that would have prevented them from going all the way. You see, that became a stumbling block to them. And so God did not require it from them at that point. You see, let them come in, just like with Abraham. 25 years later, he was circumcised when he was strong in the faith. You see, and that's when God required it. And so it was there also. And at that point, they're still babes in Christ, and to put upon them great burdens, as the men of Sam is, you do this and this and this and this and that, then we'll let you in. God doesn't function like that. And so that was their problem there. And therefore, God was kind to them and didn't require it at that point. It does not mean that he was not going to require it from them, ultimately speaking, later on in life, especially when their babies are born, you see. And as they become more aware of the importance of circumcision, of the meaning of it, of, you know, that God required it from Abraham even though he was 99. You see, until we come to that point, God is merciful to us, as he was to his own people in the wilderness who were not circumcised, but when they crossed the land, when they were about to enter into the kingdom, so to speak, he said, up to here and no more, you see, because that's the reproach of Egypt. And so he still regards it to this very day in the same manner. As here the sons of Jacob are saying, you know, that's a reproach unto us, you know, to have people who are uncircumcised in our midst. And you can imagine all this information is on the back of the mind of the many of the Jews, you know, in the days of the Apostle Paul, when the circumcision of the Gentiles was an issue, and all these things were being discussed at the time. And you can understand that, but on the other hand, also, they should have considered the other side of the coin. And so this is what we saw there. Anyway, in this case, the brethren of, that is, the brothers of Leah, and especially her immediate brothers, you know, from her mother, not only from her father, but her mother, and that was Levi, or Levi, and Shimon, and Simeon, and she was their sister, you know, full sister, and so they were about to do something here. And so we read here in verse 25, and it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city unawares. And obviously, since they were a great family and had many servants, they probably also used the help of many servants. And they could have been the two ringleaders. Doesn't mean that nobody else was with them, or that other brothers, you know, may not have a supporting supporting role there, but they were the ringleaders. They were the one moved in that direction, and they came and slew all the males, and they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and they took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went forth. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain, and now you see the supporting role of the sons of Jacob. They did not, you know, carry the death penalty, you know, that the Simeon and Levi did. But they came, you know, after all that was done, and they came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sisters. All of them were incensed by that. And I don't know if Joseph was there at this point, because Joseph was still a little boy. Maybe he was, you know, to spoil the city, you don't need to be a big boy. So all of them were involved because that was a shame on the whole family. You see, it was not only on Levi or Simeon, but it was on the whole family. And therefore the whole family in essence is participating in this. Only the cruelty part of it, you know, the murder of all of them, basically this is what it was, you know, just killed all of them, innocent people, you know. And certainly the other people, they haven't done that, haven't done anything wrong to them. It is one man that did it, but the whole city paid the penalty for it. And so the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. That was the reason. And they took their flocks and their herds and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field, I mean total cleanup, and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives. So now they've got women, you know, from these Hivites. And those women, you know, that they've taken later on, they obviously were integrated into the family of Israel. And so Hivites became Israelites. So this is a part of the war that they had there. And all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives. And they took captive, you know, they took captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. You know, in essence, the entirety of the city. Everything there. And when you think backward into the beginning of the story, when the leaders, you know, the city were trying to sell this idea of integrating with the family of Jacob, they told them, look, you know, if you do circumcise, you'll get their cattle, you'll get everything that they have, you see. Well, ironically, it turns to be just the other way around. They got everything the people of the city had. And so we read in verse 30, that is, the response of Jacob to that. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, Now, he didn't say that to the other sons. He didn't say anything about the spoiling. You know, he didn't say about the participation of the rest of the family. But he dealt in specific with, you know, with Simeon and Levi because they were the ringleaders and the great cruelty was committed by them. In other words, they have done that without mercy. And that's, in essence, is a part of the nature of Simeon and Levi. And so he said, you have troubled me to make me odious unto the inhabitants of the land, even unto the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And this is, in essence, what he was afraid of. And also, he didn't like their cruelty. Not the fact that because, you know, his daughter was defiled, you know, vengeance must have, it was up to them to take vengeance. That was not the issue, but, you know, he was afraid of what the Canaanites and the Perizzites, you know, all the people around will say about it. He says, I, being few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and smite me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And they said, that was their response to it. Should one deal with our sister as with a harlot? In other words, in essence, they're telling him, this is what you should be thinking about. You know, the honor of the family. You know, not all the enemies all around here. So in essence, he was right on one hand because of their cruelty, but he was not right. Because that's in essence, was, you might say, also like the anger of Phinehas. That's the anger of God, the wrath of God, and God was pleased with what Phinehas had done later on. And God made it very plain here by his next communication with Jacob that he was not displeased with what they have done, you know, even though they were very cruel. And obviously, people should not be too cruel. But that's the way it worked out. He understood, in essence, if the family of Jacob will continue to remain there, they would remarry. In other words, they would marry, you know, the daughters of these people. They would intermarry with them, and they will end up as idol worshippers just as they are. And since the land was given to them, and ultimately God was commissioned Israel to go and destroy all these people, you know, that is the descendants of these people, obviously, when they came back out of Egypt. So it was not far removed from that verdict. Anyway, God already slated all these people to die, to be destroyed, totally perish. So from that point of view, you see, that was not displeasing the sight of God. But Jacob, in essence, he did not like their cruelty. He was a man of peace, you see. They went over and above and beyond, that he just didn't kill only one person. You know, he may feel differently about it. But everybody, every single male, that is adults, and later on, when he blessed, as we read at the end of the book, when he gave the blessings to his sons, he reminded them of this cruelty, and also he said something that obviously God was behind it. He said that he was going to spread them, that is, in later times, as there were so many, and not even in the land of Israel, but later on, he's going to spread them among all the tribes of Israel. Now, Levi was spread among all the tribes of Israel for sake of teaching them, but Jacob meant that God is going to disperse them among all the tribes of Israel because too many of them together in one place is bad news. And the story goes on. Now in chapter 35, we read what God has to say to Jacob at this point. And so in verse 1 we read, and God said unto Jacob, that is Elohim, arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and that's shortly after this, and make there an altar unto God, who appeared unto you when you did flee from the face of Esau, your brother. In other words, this is the first time when God appeared to Jacob and made a covenant with him. And Jacob, you know, raised an altar there and says, you know, you go back there, we're going to renew here something. And as we continue to read, we're going to find out what it was. And so he says, you go there to the place where, and the altar where you have reared earlier to the God that appeared to you, which is, you know, himself. As later on, God called him, that is, Jacob called him when he was discussing this very matter. He called him the angel of the Lord, and then he said that this angel of the Lord said that he is the El that appeared to him in Bethel. And then this is what he says to him. Now, you go there, and verse 2 we read, then Jacob said unto his household and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods that are among you. Now, another question is obviously there. What does the family of God, of Jacob, the people of God, are doing with strange gods among them? Well, remember when Rachel, on the way, you know, as they were fleeing from Laban, she stole the gods of her father. And those gods apparently remain within the family. And they are among, you know, the pagans. And as it is, and you know, all these boys were raised in that area where the father and so their grandfather worshipping idols along with worshipping the God of heaven. And that was also a problem that they constantly had, not only at this point, but throughout their history. You know, they have a mixture of worshipping God on one hand and then having the pagan customs and idol worship along the way, and they are the same to this very day, and they don't see anything wrong with that. And so he tells them, get rid of them. We're going to, in essence, renew a covenant, and this time it's not only Jacob, you see. Up to now it was Abraham and God, Isaac and God, Jacob and God, and the covenant is made between them. Now for the first time, God is going to make a covenant with the entirety of the family of Jacob, of which he is going to raise a whole nation that is going to be his servant, and all of them will become Jacob, Israel. And so the first thing they need to do is to remember, you know, the first commandment, there shall be no other gods beside me, no other Elohim. And so I got to put them away. And that's what they do here. And so he said, you put away all the strange gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments and let us arise and go up to Bethel. And I will make there an altar unto God who answered me in the day of my distress. Now, when you look forward to the family of Jacob, it's coming before God, and in essence, when you look forward into the history of this people, as God brings them back out of Egypt, into this very land in which they are now, that's exactly what he does. Remember, as they told Moses, you go tell Pharaoh, I let my people go so they may come and worship me, you know, 3 days into the wilderness, and come and worship me. You see, because I'm their God, they are my people. So in essence, you see the same thing here. This is a pre-Sinai dress rehearsal with the individual family of Jacob. Later on, it became a great family, many tribes, and all of them, all the descendants now, they all came before God. So here you see, in essence, an enactment, a prior enactment to Sinai, where God was going to make now a covenant with the entirety of the household of Jacob. Only now it's just the family and whatever they had with them. And then later on, there were a few millions, and he made exactly the same covenant with all of them. And so they're going through the same, basically, here. And so obviously the first thing they need to do is get rid of the idols from their midst, cleanse themselves, purify themselves, wash their garments, you see. That's exactly what God told Moses. You go tell Israel before they come to Mount Sinai, and I make this covenant with them. You see, these are in essence physical elements of repentance. Wash your garments, you see. And that becomes symbolic for the washing of the spiritual garments. And when we appear before God, we must appear before Him in white robes and not defiled garments. And if you go to the book of Zechariah, you see a similar event there with Joshua the high priest, whose garments were defiled. And God, in essence, says to the angel, remove those filthy garments and put on him a clean garment. And then when he, in the sight of God, he is now righteous, and all that is symbolic, obviously, then he can be the servant of God, the priest of God. And we're not going to elaborate more on that now, maybe later on, when we come to the priesthood. But anyway, that's in essence what he's telling them. And they are preparing themselves, in essence, to come before God in Mount Sinai. Only this was their first Mount Sinai, where I was in Bethel, the house of God. And Sinai became also the house of God and the mountain of God. And so he says, this is what we're going to do. Go and meet God, you know, who answered me in the day of my distress and was with me in the way which I went. And so we read in verse 4, and they gave unto Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hand. You can imagine they had an awful lot of them. That's unfortunately the story of Israel. The worship of God on one hand, idols on the other hand, and all go together, and they think there is nothing wrong with that. And to this very day, a lot of people don't realize that, and they still think there is nothing wrong with that. And so they have foreign whatever with them. And God still tells us to this very day, come out of Babylon, because that's the nature of Babylon. In Babylon, they worship the God of heaven, you see, and also had all their idol worship. And things have not changed a bit since that time. And so the call is still there for all of the people of God, come out of Babylon. Don't to be defiled with her, or else you're going to be partakers of her plagues. And so they give to Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hand, and the rings which were in their ears. And you know, those rings were not just ordinary rings, just like people have today, but you know, they had a spiritual connotation, religious connotation, so obviously everything has to go. And Jacob hid them under the terebinth, which was by Shechem. And I guess at this point he's on his way. He doesn't have enough time to burn it, melt it, whatever it may be. So that's what he did. He just took all that and hid it there under the tent. Well, anyway, we're going to stop here. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.